Welcome to the Learning Can't Wait podcast, a Full Mind production. At Full Mind, our vision is to ensure every child has access to an exceptional education. Each episode, we will be joined by pathfinders within and around the education space who are bringing about transformational change on behalf of deserving students. I am your host, Haley Spierbauer.
Welcome back, Learning Can't Wait podcast listeners. It is season 5 and we are starting with a bang. I want to welcome you, Erin Moat, the Executive Director of Innovate EDU, to the podcast and really get our listeners excited for what we're going to talk about today. Welcome, Erin.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. As I told you before we started this recording, it's snowing here in New York and I am happy. How are you?
I'm great. I'm in sunny 70 degree Arizona. And as I told you, I don't love the snow. So I can look at your snow, but and hear your joy, but I wouldn't share it.
Listen, I think most of the time I would rather be in sunny 70 degree weather. So glad we both have our individual joy right now. It's going to make for a great conversation.
It always is with you.
I know. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. I have been looking forward to this. And I told you when I asked you to be on the podcast that I really wanted to have you kick off season 5. We've had 4 seasons of incredible guests, incredible topics, incredible speakers, but this feels really important. I know you are doing incredible work in this space and the listeners are always excited to talk about some of the topics that we have planned for today. So why don't we get started?
Great.
Erin, how did you come to be who you are today, the professional and personal version of yourself?
I've made a lot of mistakes. I think this is, nobody says that except people, I think, who are constantly learning. And I feel like that is the thing that has made me who I am, is that I'm constantly learning something every day with a perspective towards anyone can be my teacher. Sometimes that's my 5-year-old who, you know, teaches me about the latest thing on Roblox because, yep, she's 5 and playing Roblox already. She has an 8-year-old brother, so
younger
sibling for her.
Yep.
but, you know, to folks like Ed Gordon, who is over 100 and helped create Head Start, wisdom is all around us. And it's really about how we listen to it and how we bring it in. And so I've just made, you know, tons of mistakes in my life. And instead of letting those knock me down, I've just gotten right up again and asked for advice and help when I need it. And I think the other thing is just authenticity. You kind of know what you get when you meet me, whether you're meeting me for the first time or whether you've known me for 20 years. I just am who I am. And I don't try to be someone else. I don't try to hide the complexity that sometimes is my life as a working mom and as a technologist and as somebody who works with policymakers. It just, you know, I try to be my full self. And I think that is what, frankly, has led to how much success I've had in the work of connecting people to do work that's really hard, that maybe they don't see themselves in, that bridges uncommon alliances, is because of authenticity and candor. And frankly, just a willingness to learn and to not think I'm the smartest person ever in a room.
So there's nothing better than when someone proves their own point. You started out by saying you came to be what you are today because of mistakes. If that's not authentic, I literally don't know what is. Like, yes, first of all, that's how we learn, like you said. Mm-hmm. But secondly, like you just said, your willingness to learn from everyone and anyone without limit. And that is so authentic to who you are as a person. It you know, I know you through the inimitable Juliana Finnegan. And, you know, she said to me, Haley, what you get is what you see is what you get. Like Erin is passionate. She is caring. She is real. Talk to me a little bit, Erin, about how that presents itself in terms of your passion for the work you do and what you have pursued as your career and really your life.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I feel a sense of urgency 10 years in at Innovate EDU that is more urgent today than it was when I founded the organization in 2014. And for so many reasons, because one, I have seen what we can do together as a sector when we row in the same direction, and what we can do for kids, what we can do for educators, what we can do for families and communities, what we can do for ourselves as a sector to evolve our sector to be more of a learning ecosystem focused on continuous improvement. And so, you know, when I think about this, like this authenticity piece of it, it also means like sometimes you have to say the hard thing. And that means like not everybody likes you. Like not everybody loves the person who says the hard thing, or who, I don't know if I can say this, but you can bleep me, who says like bullshit on things on LinkedIn, you know, who calls out bias in so many forms in our space and in our sector. You know, so you have to know sort of like what's possible. You have to know that like sometimes you're going to be unpopular or people aren't going to like what you have to say. But I think when you have the kind of moral clarity that I have around the urgency of what we need to do for our young people, I believe education is our greatest national security crisis right now. And as someone who came from the national security sector, that's a big statement that, sure, you know, it's not Ukraine and it's not, you know, something that's happening overseas. It's what's happening in our own communities and schools. And I don't say that to be isolationist, but because I think we are a country that believes in American exceptionalism. And yet we're also a country that's content to have the largest number of kids in poverty in the developed world, to have maternal mortality rates in the 30% for women who are African American. We can do better and we need to do better. And we just need to like take it on.
Your boldness is part of what I think makes you such a visionary leader. I mean, to make a statement like you just made, that the largest crisis is on our own soil in our education systems, and that's what drives your work, is powerful. And I think there's a lot of people who agree with you. You know, you mentioned that when you founded Innovate EDU, you feel like its urgency and its importance is even more true today. How do you feel like the rise of attention on artificial intelligence and the changing landscape of both education and workforce has accelerated Innovate EDU's mission?
Yeah, well, let me take on the workforce and education right now, because I think it's hard not to pay attention to what our young people are telling us, which is sort of the heart of user-centered design as a technologist. Our young people right now are choosing not to pursue post-secondary pathways into institutions of higher education. They're telling us education isn't working for them. They're saying they're not meaningfully connected to school. They're not meaningfully connected to the learning experience. And so, you know, if you're in a for-profit situation, when your customers are leaving, you know your product's broken. In our education system, I think we need to hold up the mirror and say, why are young people not choosing these pathways that we've set out as a society? Why are young people saying, this doesn't work for me? Why are young people raising their hand and saying, I want something different? And it's not just, you know, in students who have the privilege to do it. It's in students who are, you know, who come from communities where college has been held up as this sort of golden ticket out of their communities. And I could talk on another podcast about why that is a super dangerous narrative for our country to say in our most effective communities, you need to exit. We'll talk about that maybe another day.
That's a big one.
That's a big one. But I think our young people are saying this isn't working for us. Our own students are saying, I don't like this anymore. And so we have to put them at the center of the way we're designing learning experiences. I think we have to think about evolving from schooling to learning as an ecosystem. And, you know, the advent of technology with AI, I mean, AI has been around for a long time. So you're going to hear me say that as a technologist. Like, I want to make sure.
Not new.
Not new.
T wasn't the beginner.
Right. But what is new is the breakthrough into consumer consciousness. It's very similar to like what happened with the internet and when it was able to, you know, go from a computer terminal to a phone with a BlackBerry to an iPhone to now, like, you can't imagine not being able to order groceries, a car, your laundry, you know, schedule whatever you need to schedule from your pocket. Like, so AI is going to transform the way we interact in society, much like the internet has transformed the way we consume information, the way we think about knowledge, for good and for bad. But I think the thing that's critical about both the connected, why students feel disconnected from our system and why we need to be attentive to AI, actually calls on us to renew the fundamental building block of why education matters and what education is. It's the relationship between each other. It's the relationship between the learner and the person who is providing the wisdom. And so in AI, if that's the, you know, democratization of expertise, then we have to equip our young people to, with the skills, to be sort of critical examiners of that expertise, to have a human in the loop, to continue to build our humanness as the rise of this technology happens. I think the same for how we have to think about we engaging students back in school. I think we have to listen to our young people about their experiences and what's not working. Guess what? They're going to tell you. And we have to renew our commitment to forging connections between caring adults and young people. And when we do that, the research tells us, research from the CDC, that we reduce suicidal ideation in young adults by 3-4x times. And so this focus back on human connection, connections to schooling, to the place of school, to the learning experience, to humans being in the loop, the strengthening of our relationships, the strengthening of our ability to build that type of learning ecosystem is, I think, what young people are calling for, is what AI is calling for. There's no silver bullet, but I'd love us to talk about how our humanness as a focus in education to build a learning ecosystem can get us to where we all know we need to go.
You touched briefly on the impact that relationships and connection for students in the school building has on their mental well-being. We'd be remiss if we did not touch on the topic of the absolute crisis we have on our hands of student mental health. And I would argue educator mental health as well, being
100%
there, both from like a direct trauma experience as well as a secondary trauma. Due to the past 4 years of really challenging schooling behavior and not schooling behavior, really challenging environment of being in schools, and really just epic proportions of rates rising quickly. When I think about how you yourself are calling out right now, yes, we want to continue pursuing the technology. You're a technologist. This is important. We have to adjust our way of thinking, but really we have to focus on people. That gives me pause in a very positive way, because there are so many anti-technologists, so many Luddites out there who are worried about our human connection, our experience as people. It really does highlight how the two are not mutually exclusive. Like there is a commonality in the rise of both at the same time.
Yeah, it's a false dichotomy, right? Like to say that technology means that we're going to lose our human connection. That's a choice we would have to make. Mm-hmm. And I postulate that we can make a different choice. And I agree with you. I think we have an unprecedented crisis, frankly, across our society around mental health right now. And for me, I'm a mom too. So like I was a mom during the pandemic. I mean, we almost quit kindergarten during the pandemic. I think we were like 2 days away from just like, you know, no longer doing 6 hours of kindergarten on Zoom. And I was ready to just quit kindergarten and red shirt my son, Robert. Right. But that's a privileged choice. First of all, call that out. And also like, because he wasn't connected to folks in the classroom. He wasn't connected to his peers. And so I think we really need to be thinking about how do we create anchors for our young people, real life anchors, like not anchors that exist in Roblox or anchors that exist in a virtual space, but how do we create places and spaces with meaningful connections with folks that they value and they see as connected to them. And that doesn't also have to be just an educator. That could be a paraprofessional, a coach, a tutor. There's many places where if we thought about how do we strengthen the human connection, I think we would be seeing our young people say, you know what? I don't need affirmation from the number of likes I get on my TikTok video or the number of people who watch my Insta reels or who look at my Twitch, that like the way that I am seen, that I am known, and that I am loved is what really matters. And I don't think we should be shy about saying that our young people, all people, need to be seen, need to be known, and need to be loved.
You know, one of the repeat guests we've had on the podcast is Hetty Chang from Attendance Works.
Oh, I love that lady.
I mean, just brilliant, brilliant beyond measure. But in the first appearance that Hetty came on, we had a assistant principal of a school district in New York who has exceptional attendance rates. The school is well known for their attendance rates and their like lever that they pull for attendance, which, sorry, I should back up and scaffold this a bit. Mental health is connected to attendance. We see that with 100%. Schools that have higher attendance, they have more positive outcomes on their student mental health reading, self-assessment, and reporting of mental illness. So just to name that, the two are very well connected. And the school leader said that they have a very robust mentorship program in their school. So any adult in the building, could be the custodian, could be a counselor, could be a teacher, is connected to kids and the cohorts follow through the length of high school. And it just speaks to what you're saying here. Like there is a student is with a teacher or an adult in the building throughout their time, which is showing better mental health outcomes, better attendance, and ultimately is helping this district thrive and serve as a real model for how you create that connectedness within the building. You know, it's building blocks here.
Yeah. And I think we have to your point about educators, I think we have to be as attentive to the connectiveness of our educators in their school communities or in their professional learning communities as we are to our young people. Like the thing that I love about educators is they are constant learners, right? So one of the things I don't want us to see is a toggling down of opportunities for our educators to grow and have professional development. The inability for folks as we face educator shortages, seeing folks having to give up their prep period or give up the time that they have in professional learning communities in order to staff more classes. We really need to be attentive to making the education profession a sustainable profession. And that means looking at the working conditions that our educators have and the working conditions that we're creating. And so we do a lot of work at Innovate EDU on diverse pathways into the profession through an alliance we have called the Pathways Alliance, where we built the national guideline standards for educator apprenticeships with the Department of Labor and the U.S. Department of Education, which have now been adopted from 2 to 28 states in 1 year. It's amazing. But one of the things that the research tells us about educators who stay in the profession that deeply informed the work that we did on the national guideline standards is that when a teacher is an apprentice, when an educator is an apprentice, they are not the teacher of record in their classroom. They have a master teacher or a certified teacher that's mentoring them, that they're learning from, that they can make some of those mistakes that I talked about earlier, that they, you know, aren't put forward as the teacher of record on the first day that they're taking on a new job, that we're appreciating the professionalism of educators and the need to build those capacities and dispositions. And so, you know, when I built a school in Brooklyn that I'm still I get to be the founder of, so I get to like wave at homecoming and graduation, but I'm no longer involved in the day-to-day operations. But when we built Brooklyn Lab, when Eric and I were sitting around the table in Brooklyn in 2014, we looked at each other, and on this napkin where we literally built our school design, which I still have the napkin. I also saved like the champagne cork for my engagement and all these things.
It's all framed. I hope
it's not framed. It's like in a drawer. Okay. But one day I'll frame it when my kids are in college and I can get to it.
get some free time.
Yeah, when I get some free time. But it says teachers trained like doctors. And so I just want us to think about the way we train doctors in our society, that we create pathways for them to develop the knowledge capacities, the mentor capacities, the ability to learn in groups, the ability to learn in professional communities, the ability to make mistakes, the ability to have an attending and a mentor. Like, that's the way we should be thinking about our educators. It's as an important profession as a doctor. We need to think about that. I'll just bring back, like, if education is our greatest national security crisis, we need to really be investing in the people who are going to help us solve that.
Here, here. Educators deserve to be on a pedestal. Erin, you are incredibly well known for bringing people together. And I imagine in that work you do of bringing people together for collaboration, you get the ability to see really strong partnerships develop. And I'll use your words here, that complement one another versus compete with one another. Can we talk a little bit about, because I think this is now like having a step back a bit from the conversation of, you know, teacher development and student mental health, but it's really talking about the professional learning that happens within the nonprofit space for the people that are sometimes influencing these, the things that get built and the decisions that get made. So let's talk about that. How do you facilitate a collaborative relationship in the, let's say, nonprofit space, akin to the type of collaboration you're talking about for educators in their early years of learning to become a teacher?
Yeah, so at Innovate EDU, we have this thing that we call 80% common. And it's a really deliberate strategy to not get everybody to 100% agree, to try to get the number of organizations that we bring together in partnership to agree on everything all the time is impossible. Yeah. And so just like recognizing that, like, you know, you can get often to 80% or 60%, that you can get to common ground, frankly, across political lines, across geographies, across, you know, the types of fractured ideological situation we have right now in our country around a whole raft of education issues, that you have to look for common ground. You have to pursue common ground rather than pursue difference. And so this comes from technology, right? I'm an enterprise architect by training. And so maybe some of your listeners use rideshare. They use Uber, they use Lyft, they use maybe something that's unique to their context. Maybe they live in Austin, Texas, and they have like Ride Austin or some other local ride sharing app. What you might not know about those ride sharing apps is on the back end, they are all using the same payments platform, the same mapping technology, the same customer ticketing system, the same trunk, as we call it, the same tech stack. It's 80%. Maybe.
I love it.
Yeah. Maybe 90% common since the last time I looked. But those two distinct brands, Uber and Lyft, for example, have built around the 20% differential, the thing that's different about them. So Lyft has their like pink sort of more fun brand. Uber chose a more corporate focus. They sort of built different things around the user experience. They share a lot of the same safety features. The user experience has a brand connotation, but actually the infrastructure is common. And so thinking about that, that the experience that you have is different maybe when you use them, but all the things that undergird that technology is the same. And so how do we get to commonality on infrastructure? How do we get to commonality on the operating tech stack of education? And so how do we have a common definition of the competencies and dispositions it takes for an educator apprentice? We build the national guideline standards. And there we built two sets of standards, one for collective bargaining environments, one for non-collective bargaining environments. That's how we got to the 80% there. We had to recognize the context in which people were operating. Project Unicorn, our longest alliance that focuses on data interoperability in education. When we started that alliance, nobody knew what data interoperability was. And then this August, First Lady Jill Biden stood up in the East Room of the White House and said, we need data interoperability and cybersecurity to come together. And so how did we actually get there from, you know, a conference room where nonprofits and standards bodies and a K-12 advisory board and industry were all thinking about data interoperability, thinking about how it could help share information about young people in a secure and private way, how it could inform data-driven instruction. How did we get it to a place where now, you know, it's the second biggest challenge that CIOs and CTOs talk about across the country, and they use the word interoperability. They don't say things like my systems just don't talk to each other. It's because we all rode in the same direction. We said, our big goal is this, and that's what we're going to row towards in the same direction. So it's about clear vision, clear goals, and finding common ground.
This is not easy work. And your emphasis on 80%, which to be candid, I had not heard that before as part of your work, but makes so much sense to me. It also highlights one of the beautiful things about our world is the diversity of it. So it's not saying, you know, I think about, there's this one kid's book that talks about if everybody was the same and wore the same outfits, it would be so boring. The world would be boring. So I appreciate both the emphasis on there's a lot more we have in common than we know, especially in such a fractured environment today. But also, you know, we're individuals and we have, you know, unique vision and experiences that help develop who we are and what we build and how we create. Whew, Erin, I am like feeling dread about getting to the end of a conversation, given our, you know, how long we typically record these episodes, because I feel like I could talk to you for days about literally everything that has come out of your mouth. You really are so incredibly inspirational as you share the work your teams are doing. I think about the word interoperability, just to go back to this point, interoperability, synonymous with Project Unicorn. Like, it literally, the two just go together when I think about where it came from. And I'm sure so many others feel that way, and how proud you must have been when Dr. Jill Biden shared and used the language and called for action there. But I do feel like we have to get to our final question, which, you know, especially as someone who has built a school and speaks with school leaders on a regular basis, came from your last call being with a superintendent. I'm sure you have really important wisdom to share, but you know, Erin, I ask everybody at the end of the conversation what advice you would give an educator who's just beginning their career today.
Take care of yourself. I have come to realize that I can only be my full self when I take care of myself. And that means, you know, when I get enough sleep, something basic like that, but also when I find joy in sort of small moments, and experiences when I can take one of those mistakes that I talked about and sort of just say like, yeah, that's a mistake. Let me get back up from that. And I think the last thing I would say is ask for help. This is something that I have not always been great at, just to be radically candid. I've not always been great at asking for help and saying, oh, I need some help here, or I don't know how to solve this problem, or what am I going to do? When you invite wisdom and learning, you'd be so surprised what happens. I think that what I have discovered is that vulnerability is my superpower.
Here again. I mean, Erin, thank you so much for calling out the things that are hard to say, both on this podcast and in real life. I think it's a sign of a true like empathetic human who's willing to stand up for what's right, say it out loud, and call it out upon themselves as well. So grateful you're joining us here on the podcast today. You've shared so much. I know we could have 8,000 more conversations, and maybe one day we will on the podcast and in other places and spaces. Thanks for taking time out of your day to be here with me.
What a pleasure, and enjoy that snow.
Thank you, and enjoy that 70 degrees. And thank you to everybody who tuned in.
Thanks for listening to the Learning Can't Wait podcast. If you like what you heard, please rate, review, and share this episode. Be the first to know when we have a new episode by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts. If you'd like to be a guest on the show or have a suggestion for an episode, email us at podcast@fullmindlearning.com.